You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Tamils in Sri Lanka have been fighting for fair and equal treatment since as early as the 1950s. Armed conflict between Tamil rebels and the Sri Lankan state ended in May 2009 when the government announced that it had defeated the separatist Tamil Tigers. The subsequent state repression caused a huge exodus of Tamils from the country. Last October, 76 attempted to seek refugee status in Canada, only to end up in detention as suspected Tamil Tigers, an organization the Canadian government defined as terrorist back in 2006. A week ago, Canada released the last of these 76 refugees. We're joined today by Krishna Saravanamuthu, who's a member of the Tamil Youth Organization and president of the York Federation of Students. Good morning, Krishna.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into talking about the situation today, can you fill us in on how Sri Lanka came to such a state of conflict?
Well, you know, that's something that we can definitely take up the entire 50 minutes talking about. But, you know, to be brief, there's a strong history of state repression and marginalization of the Tamil minority in Sri Lanka. This was seen through, acts such as the Citizenship Act, which essentially revoked 1 million Tamils of their citizenship, and it disenfranchised them politically and socially. We saw this as well through an act called Standardization, which essentially mandated that Tamil students applying for universities had to get higher marks than their Sinhalese counterparts on the university admission tests. And this was also seen through more explicit forms of violence against the Tamil community. Starting all the way in 1956, there were riots that were sponsored by the state. They also saw the complicity of the Sri Lankan armed forces. The most notable of these riots are the riots of 1983, known as Black July in the Tamil community. And these riots, saw my own mother, for instance, being chased through the seas, through the capital streets of Colombo by a machete-wielding mob. And then to bring you into the current situation, at the beginning of January 2009, the Sri Lankan government arbitrarily, removed itself from a ceasefire agreement with the Liberation Tigers of Tamililam. And essentially waged a war, a bloody war, that ended in May 2009 against the Tamil population. And this saw indiscriminate bombings against Tamil civilians, hospitals, schools, churches, mosques, temples. They were all bombed indiscriminately. Amnesty International accused the Sri Lankan government of using banned weapons like cluster bombs, the same weapons that were used by the Israeli defense forces during the attacks on Gaza. In addition to that, prominent human rights groups around the world were trying to stop the violence, they were trying to stop the bloodshed, but the Sri Lankan government didn't heed those calls. And as a result, the over 300,000 people who did survive the indiscriminate bombings were then forced into internment camps where they were denied their freedom of mobility. They didn't have the ability to leave and go back to their homes. In addition to this, there was a heavy militarization presence there. The camps themselves were surrounded by barbed wire. People were constantly at gunpoint. And there was a report after report of enforced disappearances where, young Tamil males and girls would be taken away at gunpoint. There were also reports of extrajudicial killings. This is now being confirmed by the video that Channel 4 News in England recently leaked. That was the same video that was given to them by Journalists for Democracy in Sri Lanka. And that same video has now been authenticated by the United Nations Special Rapporteur on War Crimes. And all of this is part of a growing body of evidence, calling for an international investigation into human rights violations, crimes against humanity, and war crimes during the final months of the war between the LTT and the Sri Lankan government.
Now, all this has spurred a lot of people from the Tamil communities there to flee. What kind of success have refugees been having at seeking asylum around the world?
Unfortunately, it hasn't been that great. There's still a standstill, for instance, in Indonesia, where over 200 refugees are still waiting on a boat, trying to get entry into the country. In Australia, there was a very similar situation. And the same situation obviously happened here in Canada with the Ocean Lady ship that came here with the 76 refugees. Unfortunately, because of, you know, this terrorist kind of labeling that's been applied on the Tamil community, there's been an essential stigmatization of the entire community, and legitimate refugees who are seeking, escape from persecution are being denied essential human rights.
Well, let's talk about the 76 refugees detained here in Canada last October. On what basis did the government decide that the refugees were Tamil Tigers?
Well, that's the interesting part. The government ultimately had no evidence at all, and that's why all of these individuals were released. But all of this, again, is based on this notion of, you know, labeling an entire community as a terrorist organization or as terrorists. And when the state has the ability to label a community as a terrorist or as a terrorist entity, then what the state is also able to do is obliged by, for instance, international covenants which stipulate that countries have an obligation to provide refuge for those who are escaping war and persecution. And the same thing happens here within our own country. It's also an excuse for the state often to undermine, the civil liberties, the welfare of its own citizens by using this argument of terrorism. We've seen the same thing in the 70s, in the 60s with the labeling of people as communists.
I wonder if you could reflect on the fact that Canada detained these people immediately, yet we Canada presents itself as a place that is an open place for asylum seekers.
Well, that's the issue, right? We're seeing this growing trend where Canada is moving away from its traditional reputation of being a country that's open to the world, a country that's willing to take in people who are, looking for a better life, who are trying to escape war and persecution. But because, again, of this notion of terrorism, countries like Canada have been able to, not really the country, but the government has been able to kind of sidetrack its obligations, both social, moral, and political.
Now, the fate of the last 25 men from the boat of refugees was supposed to be determined in a closed hearing, and last Friday this attempt was dropped and the men were released. Why do you think the government abandoned its accusations?
Well, I think there's a lot of public pressure that was being applied on the Canadian government from coast to coast in this country. I know for a fact that youth all over this country were organizing. They were meeting with labor unions, with students' unions. They were meeting with their MPPs and their MPs. And they were bringing attention, to not only the plight of these 76 men, but to the plight of, the hundreds of thousands of Tamil civilians who are still confined to these internment camps. So I think that definitely played a part in it. I think the solidarity that labor unions, students' unions, community organizations like No One Is Illegal, for instance, also gave to the Tamil community played a huge factor in the eventual release of these individuals.
What now that they've been released, what are the challenges ahead for these people seeking refuge?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is going to be one that plagues the entire community. It's going to be, again, this labeling of being called a terrorist, this stigmatization, this ostracization of individuals in an entire community. And no matter where these individuals go now, they're going to kind of have this labeling hanging over their heads. And it's going to be very hard for them to settle down and seek a new life here in Canada there's going to be constant kind of, ostracization of these individuals. At the same time, there are well-reported cases of, organizations like the RCMP, CSIS, just showing up at normal Tamil civilians' houses and interrogating them and harassing them, applying scare tactics on their families as well. So these are the kind of issues, civil liberties issues that the Tamil community faces and that these individuals will probably face. So they're definitely going to need the support of their fellow Canadians.
How has this overall situation, the detaining of refugees and the their suspicion as being Tamil Tigers, what effect has that had on the Tamil community here in Canada?
Well, it's had a huge effect. Tamil youth who are involved in trying to bring attention to the human rights violations, the lack of any type of accountability in Sri Lanka are being targeted as suspected terrorists or as being sympathetic to terrorists. And that's definitely placing a strain on these individuals who are regular students like you and I. They're regular people that go to work. It's essentially trying to intimidate them from not talking about these issues. And so, you know, that has a natural kind of bearing as well on their families, on their friends, their peers, and our entire community that's afraid to get up and speak up about what's actually happening in Sri Lanka because they're afraid that the government is going to come and call them a terrorist.
Now, I'm sure as a Tamil here in Canada, you must feel a little bit of a sense of isolation in that it's a small community, but very important to you. What would you suggest for people who want to support Tamil demands for justice, both here in Canada and abroad?
Well, I think it's about holding our own federal government accountable because, you know, in spite of, you know, the notable human rights violations in Sri Lanka, for instance, you know, the Asian Center for Human Rights has stated that Sri Lanka is the worst human rights violator in all of South Asia. Human Rights Watch has gone further and said that Sri Lanka is the worst human rights violator in the world. You know, in spite of the fact that in 2008, Sri Lanka was booted off the United Nations Human Rights Council because of their atrocious record, Canada continues to provide aid and foreign funding to the Sri Lankan government, but there's no accountability, there's no transparency to say where is this money going. And a lot of times, you know, people within government circles in Sri Lanka have often, you know, kind of blowed the whistle and said, look, this money isn't going where it's supposed to be going. It's going into, you know, militarization efforts. It's going into the armed forces. So what I would suggest to the Canadian government is to be very careful where they put their money and also to create checks and balances to ensure that the money they're putting into Sri Lanka goes where it's supposed to go.
And how can people here, people who are listening, support that?
I think that they need to make this an issue in the parliament. This needs to be an issue where you're going to your MPs and your MPPs and you're speaking to them and saying, you know, as Canadians, we're concerned about what's happening in Sri Lanka. We're concerned about our Tamil sisters and brothers, you know, living there in within the island of Sri Lanka as well as here, you know, because the atrocious human rights violations there have an impact on the psychology, on the very existence of the community here. The community right now is in a state of disarray. You know, there's a sense of hopelessness because in spite of all of these noted violations, you know, in spite of all of this evidence that has come out accusing the Sri Lankan government of war crimes, the international community has failed to respond for the most part. And one would expect a country like Canada, you know, that has a reputation, for instance, for peacekeeping, would take the charge, would take the lead on trying to put some pressure on the Sri Lankan government, you know, to ensure justice. Because the way I see it, you know, the absence of war doesn't necessarily mean peace. What brings peace is justice. In order to have justice, you have to have accountability. So again, these individuals who have been accused of war crimes, they must appear before an international criminal body, and they must answer to the world, essentially, for the charges that they're being accused of.
Thanks for joining me this morning, Krishna.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
I've been speaking with Krishna Saravanamutu. He is with the Tamil Youth Organization and the president of the York Federation of Students. For more information on human rights conditions in Sri Lanka, you can visit Canadian Human Rights Voice on the web at chrv.ca.